intrigue, suspense, adventure. This is Torah Jazz, session, I think we're on session 20. This is the Tazria Matsura edition, coming to you live from my guest room. And I'm very excited. This is an amazing parsha. Anytime we get to these parshios of concepts, ideas that no longer really exist for us, so we could try to envision and imagine what life was like back then when the Matsura was a common occurrence. The Matsura, this was the case of the fellow who had Tzarat. Now, if we were forced to translate the word Tzarat, which I hope never to be, someone made me walk the plank and said, translate this word, I would probably translate the word Tzarat as Tzarat, because it doesn't really have any good translation into any other language. Now, if we do look at bad translations, you might see it translated as leprosy, which clearly it is not. Leprosy is a physical affliction, and if we follow carefully the verses over here, we will see that Tzarat is indeed a spiritual affliction. And just to make the point, sort of, we see that unlike a medical affliction, which any expert could diagnose, the Tzarat is not diagnosed over here. Rather, it is confirmed by the Kohen. And until that Kohen gives the verbal confirmation, the Tzarat is not a Tzarat. That is to say, the consequence of a Tzarat is that it impurifies anybody who has it or comes in contact with it. However, until the Kohen comes and claims it, states it as being a Tzarat, it is not yet a Tzarat. And we see clearly in the verse this has to be done through the Kohen. Even if you had a Tzarat expert, someone who knew all the details of the development of Tzarat, what's considered a Tzarat, it still would not help. Even if the Kohen didn't understand Tzarat, but he found a learned person who he relied on, who told him this is Tzarat, until the Kohen says this is Tzarat, it does not become Tzarat. So you see, Tzarat is a spiritual affliction. It's not a physical affliction. And that is actually why we don't have Tzarat nowadays. Now, there are three types of negoim, right? Negoim, blemishes. There are three types of blemishes that all share the name Tzarat, even though they come about in totally different ways. That is to say, there are the blemishes on the physical body of the person. There are these negoim also that appear on clothes, and also on structures, right? Garments and structures. And even though they come about in three different ways, they all share the same name. They're all put next to each other in the Torah. And even the types of blemishes themselves share name from one type of Tzarat to the next. I mean, what's also pretty fascinating over here is even the way we refer to the parts of the garment where the Tzarat show up have strong parallels to the human body itself. We speak about the karachat and the gabachat on the garments, whereas normally those are considered parts of a person, right? The part of the back of the head and the front of the head. But here they're referring to parallel concepts on a garment. Maybe we'll get into that idea a little bit more later, why they're shared like that. Okay, so we do see that Tzarat could afflict a person in one of three different ways. It's a spiritual affliction that we don't have anymore. The Tzarat on the houses is what we're particularly going to focus on today, especially this idea that if we look at the verse, if you want to find the verse inside, where it's in Parshat Matsura, chapter 14, verse 33-34. So in 34 over here, it says, when you come to the land of Canaan, which I've given you as a birthright, as an inheritance, and I put this blemish of Tzarat in your house, right, in the place that you have acquired. Okay, so the question is, we see clearly that Tzarat only happens when we come into the land. More than that, that we have an achuza in the land. That is to say that the land actually becomes ours. It's our property at that point. Only after the chaluka, right, when Yeshua splits up the land to the different tribes and each one gets their own plot, their own property in that land, only then does Tzarat affect homes. That is to say, already from the time of the desert, right, when the Jews were wandering in Midbar Sinai, in Sinai Desert, the Tzarat already affected them then. We all see from the story of Miriam that Tzarat affects the person even out of the land of Israel. But it's only in the land of Israel, and only after the Jewish people are settled in the land of Israel, that the Tzarat affects homes. So the Ramban over here explains that it's a matter of being close to Hashem. When we're very close to Hashem, so Hashem sustains us, He maintains us, and that means to say that the health and the quality of everything that we have comes directly from Hashem. So everything is kept in this state of perfection because of our closeness to Hashem. As we push away, if we create distance between us and Hashem, so that no longer has that protection over us, so we get these physical blemishes, these nigoyim, that's a revelation of the fact that we're distancing ourselves away from Hashem. So it's only in the land of Israel, where we're closest to Hashem, that our property takes on that value, where our property is coming directly from Hashem, where it's being watched over directly from Hashem. They take on that value, that when, as we distance ourselves, that the property becomes blemished. Now, even though this idea is only stated explicitly on the houses, the Ramban would like to extend it also to clothing, even though the Ramban does not have a source for that. And as we go on, hopefully we'll see a little bit the difficulty in the Ramban's position, which is why he wants to come from a svara, from logic, and it does not have a source for that idea. Okay, negoim, these blemishes, they come from primarily Lashon Hara. That seems to be pretty much the agreed-upon conclusion of the commentaries. And especially, it seems, if you look over in the Gemara and Erchin on page 15, folio B, which seems to be the major discussion of Tzarat in the Gemara. So over there, that whole is a whole, basically, page, the entire back and forth speaking about Lashon Hara, about negative speech and the consequences of negative speech. And Tzarat comes, boom, right down in the middle of this back and forth about negative speech. So the cause of Tzarat, Lashon Hara, negative speech. Okay, even though the Gemara does list seven causes altogether, in the Midrashim, one Midrash lists seven, another lists ten, there seem to be other related ideas which bring about Tzarat. But it seems to be that the root idea is Lashon Hara, negative speech, or possibly even more fundamentally, Ayin Hara or Ayin Tsar, which is having a negative outlook on the world. Okay, so this idea of Lashon Hara, of negative speech, Rashi explains throughout the Parsha. This is the reason why the Metzora, this fellow who's afflicted, he has to leave all three encampments of the Jewish people. There's the Machane Shechina, right? It's where the Mishkan or the tabernacle is settled in the middle of the encampment. He cannot be there. The second encampment, the Machane Leviah, where the Leviim are settled, he cannot be in there. And then there's the Machane Yisrael, right? The encampment of all the different 12 tribes, he's not allowed to be there either. If he has this affliction, he has to leave all three encampments. So Rashi explains that just the way that this person created division, isolation among society, right? A person who uses negative speech, gossip, right? Speaking about people in a derisive manner. These sorts of things break up families, they break up homes, and just like this person created division among society, so we're going to isolate him so that he recognizes the effects of his action. That, Rashi also says, is the reason why specifically his korban, his offering, when he comes to purify himself, is with birds, because birds are mipatpatim. They're always chirping. You know, there's a lot to understand about this idea, this concept of the birds. I wish I would have had time to go into it more deeply. Yeah, I just have this question: why exactly the birds? I'm assuming that pretty much all animals are mitpatpatim, right? They're always making different noises, and we certainly don't understand them. There is an idea that Rav Hirsch brings that, according to the Medrash, the Rabbi Yossi learns that the bird he brings is specifically a dror, right? It's specifically a type of bird called a dror, which I guess is some, I think it's some sort of a finch, that was known to take up residence in people's homes. So the idea was that it would live in the fields, or it would live in your home. It didn't really have any care or concern for social structure, social mores, just sort of, you know, did whatever it want. And that's why it's called a dror. A drawer like a chofshi, like something which is free, which is something free, not as in free monetarily, but which has no restrictions. So this drawer acts like it has no restrictions. It doesn't care about social mores. You know, he's like a bad hall roommate, just always coming into your house and taking up residence there, even though you don't really want him there. So he says that's this element of the Baal Lashon Hara, the person who uses negative speech. He sort of doesn't care about social structures. He's totally free. He doesn't feel bound or connected to anything like that. Okay, so that's an interesting idea, why this idea of a bird. I was also curious, and I don't know if biologically birds spend more time singing without it necessarily being a signal to other birds or other animals about, right, sort of just talking carelessly and thoughtlessly, as it were. I mean, obviously they're birds, and that would be the parallel to the idea of the person who speaks negative speech, that does not much thought goes into his communication. He's just sort of yapping nonstop. Okay, but now comes the big question, because we're going to look at Rashi over here by Holmes. And Rashi's going to bring the Medrash Rabbah, the opinion of Reb Shimon over here, and that's going to create a lot of problems for us. As of now, we spoke about the idea of Tzarat. It seems pretty straightforward. A person has negative behavior that is bad, has negative effects, ill effects on society, and so he gets this spiritual affliction as a way to perfect himself, to fix himself, and reintegrate himself back into society by understanding what he's done wrong and what he needs to work on. When it comes to that, that includes the idea of the person, the physical person, and garments. But when it comes to the home, having blemishes in the home, we see Rashi takes an entirely new approach. So, if you want to see, this is the Rashi where we were before, chapter 14, verse 34. Rashi, on the spot, says as following: V'natati neged tzarat, I placed a blemish of tzarat. Rashi says, besorihi lahem, it's a good tiding. Shanegoyim b'malem, I'm giving you good news that these blemishes are coming to you. Why? Because the 40 years that the Jews were wandering in the desert, everybody knew where their goal, the target was. They were coming into the land of Israel. And in the land of Israel, you had the Amorim. And the Amorim knew, when these Jews come, they're going to wipe us out. They're going to take our property, and there's nothing we could do to stop them. But there's one thing that we can do, right? Let them get this property. You know what it's like? It's like the joke about the fellow who got caught by cannibals. And they said, we're going to eat you and you're going to turn your skin into a canoe. And they gave him one last request. And he said, I'd like a fork. And they said, okay. They handed him a fork. And he started stabbing himself all over his body and saying, here's your canoe. So that's sort of the idea over here as well. With the Amorim, they said, the Jews are going to get us. We don't want them to get our treasure. And so they buried their treasure deep into the walls of their homes while the Jews were wandering in the desert. So the Jews would come in. They'd take over the land, but they would not know that there was all this treasure, right? If we can't have it, you can't have it either. And it's through this nega, through this blemish, that now the whichever part of the home was afflicted, those stones would have to be removed, and also the cement mortar that was holding them in place. And through opening up the wall, they would realize there was treasure in the walls. And then news would spread like wildfire, and people would know that there were treasures buried, hidden in their homes. Okay, so that's the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, which Rashi brings over here, that Tzarat on the homes comes for this good tidings, to be the bearer of good tidings. And that is going to raise a lot of questions for us, because nowhere in the whole discussion of homes does Rashi mention any of these other things that we've been discussing earlier about negative outlook on the world or negative speech. So what happened? Are we saying that it's only for that? Which seems a little bit strange, because we've seen the parallels between the tzarat on the homes and the body and the garments. So let's at least, at the very least, let's start with the understanding of why Rabbi Shimon, Rashi are taking this approach. So we do see something very different in the language of the Negoim on homes than we see everywhere else. And that is, as the verse says, V'natati Negat Tzarat. I have placed this Tzarat, right? This is Hashem speaking. I have placed. And if we look at the other places where Tzarat occurs, it comes up in a language of occurring. It says, Kitihyeh. Yihyeh or tihyeh, when there is, when there will be, right? When it happens over by the person, the negoim, the blemishes that show up on a person or that show up on a garment, says when it happens, when it comes about that this occurs, as opposed to here where Hashem says, I'm going to put it, which seems to imply, well, whether you make it happen or don't make it happen, I'm going to put it there. Okay, now the question is that up until now, these negoim, these blemishes were, as we saw, an onish. They were a punishment. So what are they over here? Are they a gift? Are they a punishment? Are they both? Why is it only in the land of Israel, right, that this happens after the distribution of the land? And if this news is going to come about, why should it come about through these blemishes? Right, Hashem could have had, he wanted to give us this good news, right? There's treasure in them homes. He could have had it come through a Navi, right? It could have been the prophet who said, guess what, guys? Bing, 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 bing. My spiritual treasure alert has gone off. There's money in these homes. Why couldn't it have been through an accident, right? A few bricks fell out and the person noticed. Specifically, there's this whole idea of Tzarat that we've built up over the last Parsha, that now this is the tool, this is the harbinger for this gift that Hashem wants to give us. Now, there's going to be three more questions here, which are also very troubling, which is, first of all, this first question is really seems to be a question that the Al-Sheikh is dealing with, which we'll see that Al-Sheikh in a second, which is, V'daber Hashem el Moshe v'Aaron lemor. Right, where this is going, this is Hashem, the full name of Hashem, the Tetragrammaton, the Yud K Vav K. That is the name of Hashem that usually indicates God's characteristic of mercy, not God's characteristic of din, of judgment. Here, this is a punishment for ill behavior. So why are we attaching the Yud K Vav K, God's name of mercy, to this punishment, to this judgment over here? The second question is, this person is being punished, right? The person in the home, if the whole point is it's coming about because he spoke Lashon Hara, because he had Ayin Hara, whatever it was, why is he being rewarded for that? Let him be rewarded, but don't reward him for that, right? If the nega is coming about because of that, why is he being rewarded for such a thing? And then the third question, and this question, as a matter of fact, I'll be honest, has been bothering me for years. And this year I finally had time to sort of work it through to the end, as far as I was able to get, which is, even if we can explain those two things, the third question is that this Basura, this good news, is going to come about from the first guy who calls the Kohen and he opens up his wall and he finds that there's treasure inside. Now, if this guy was being punished. He was speaking Lashon Hara, or he had Ayin Hara. And that's the reason he has an egg in his home. So now, all the merit, all the reward that's coming to the Jewish people is going to be coming to them through this fellow. And we have a rule, a principle, rather. Megalgalin Schut Al Yedei Zakai. Right? We bring about merit through a person who is meritorious. And only things which are detrimental do we bring about through people who have done things which they're obligated, they're liable for, right? Liabilities to the one who's liable. So how could it be that something so positive is wonderful and coming about through somebody who's really liable? Okay, the first two, those three questions, the last series of questions, we're going to see the first two are dealt with by different commentaries, and the third one is not. Okay, so the Al-Sheikh wants to, first of all, Rav Moshe Al-Sheikh, in his commentary on the Chumash, he speaks about this idea of something negative and something positive occurring to a person through the same medium. Now, you can imagine as a parent or any educator or anybody who's put in a position where they have to rebuke or educate, there are punishments, meaning results, consequences, in order to correct certain behaviors, and then there's rewards. But a punishment cannot be a reward, and a reward cannot be a punishment. Those are two separate concepts. So the Al-Sheikh says that for Hashem, who has the total scale, the total understanding of a person's merits and demerits, his mitzvahs and his transgressions, that Hashem can actually bring about a reward and a punishment through the very same medium. That's not a contradiction. That's the case over here, that even though this person spoke Lashon Hara, and because of that Lashon Hara, he deserves to have a part of his home, right, his whole family life turned upside down while he deals with this blemish. But the same token, if this person had a merit somewhere else, Hashem could use the very same medium to give about the punishment and the merit. And that in itself is a tremendous insight into the greatness of Hashem as the ultimate judge, understanding when and how to mete out both punishment and reward, even through the very same medium. The other thing, the Al-Sheikh gives a few different answers over here, and the one that he believes is the Iker Pshat, the sort of essential understanding of this whole concept, is that we are meant to learn that just like the land of Israel is a gift, right? That's why it comes when we finally receive the land. We finally have this gift in our hand. We've been given something from Hashem. So too are we meant to understand that punishments come as a gift from Hashem. Not that they come from Hashem, but that they're actually a gift, that there's actually something beneficial about us. And the reason why this is, as the Medrash actually explains, the following. The Medrash says that Nigoyim, these blemishes, did not come into the world the way you might imagine them, sometimes on the person, sometimes on the garment, sometimes on the home, but rather, Hashem never wants to start by punishing a person directly. And so therefore, if at all it could be avoided, Hashem will try to bring the punishment about in an indirect way. I'm sorry for using the word try, not really appropriate by Hashem. Hashem will bring the punishment about in an indirect way. And then if the person doesn't realize, doesn't wake up, doesn't take advantage of that opportunity, it begins to move in concentric circles closer and closer to the person until it reaches the person himself. So therefore, if the person was speaking Lashon Hara, right? We see that the Lashon Hara starts, this is the Medrash tells us, it afflicts the home. And if he doesn't wake up, if he wakes up, he does tshuva, amazing. If he doesn't wake up, he doesn't do tshuva, so then it afflicts the garment. And if he realizes, he wakes up, he does tshuva, amazing. He doesn't wake up, doesn't do tshuva. Finally, it afflicts him. And it's a big, long process, the whole process of the purification from these afflictions. So it gives a lot of person a lot of time and a lot of opportunities to really grow in the tshuva process. If we look at the language of the Rambam at the end of Hilchos Negoim, the laws of blemishes, Hilchos Tzaras, the Rambam's language is actually very beautiful. He says it's a tremendous miracle that Hashem did, right, this whole concept that if a person starts speaking Lashon Hara, boom, his home is afflicted, he has the chance to do tshuva. Now, it seems to me, you could look at the Rambam, you'd be the judge yourself, the Rambam is trying to express the idea as following, just because of the language, the way the Rambam expresses this idea. He says, a person speaks Lashon Hara, mishtanos kiros beso. The walls of his home change. Now, of course, if this is the idea that it's coming through miraculous intervention, right? So, of course, he speaks Lashon Hara, the walls of his home change. But it could be that the Rambam is also trying to tell us that spiritually, right, this attack, hitting the home, and then the garment, and then the person, it's not just a matter of concentric circles, moving from further to closer to the person himself, but rather it's a reflection of the actual reality that the person's creating. That is to say, when a person speaks Lashon Hara in his home, right? When a person acts with Ayin Hara, with Ayin Tsar, when a person's stingy or has a negative world outlook, that impacts the home, right? Those living around him, his entire environment changes. The tzarat, this affliction, is just the physical manifestation of the spiritual reality that he is creating through his behavior. Now, if he keeps going, right, he has a chance to do tshuva. If he does tshuva, he can turn around the environment in his home, right? We've seen it. We know people who have changed the environment in their home. But if he doesn't do tshuva, then it's going to get on his clothes. What does it mean it's going to be on his clothes? It means that it's going to be something that it's not just an environment he's created around him in his home, but it's something that he takes with him, he carries with him everywhere he goes. But the good news is about clothes that you can take them off, right? It's just a garment that you're wearing. So you can do tshuva. You can still take off the garment, right, and put on a different garment. But if he doesn't do tshuva, then the affliction afflicts and affects him directly. Now it's already part of you. Now you're already a Baal Lashon Hara, right? It's a person who's made himself, that's become part of his, habitualized himself to speaking, to looking poorly at the world around him. And that's going to be a much harder process. Okay, the language of the Rambam. By the way, it's a beautiful idea. We see it in the way that the Makos, the plagues, came to Mitzrayim, the way that they came. The Medrash itself points out that, you know, the properties went first, and only in the end did God actually afflict the Egyptians personally in the firstborn. But what's fascinating is if you look at the groupings of the plagues, so the third plague in that group is always on the body. So, right, we have blood, frogs, and lice, right? So it's only lice which are directly on the body. Then we have Arav Dever Shechin, and it's only the boils which are directly on the body. Then Barad, Arba, and Choshech, right? It's only the darkness that was, their physical bodies were frozen, they couldn't see light, but for the Jews around them, everything was all lit up. Okay, so good. Now, the Kliyakra over here, there's a very beautiful Kliyakra as well. He's also coming to answer this question, why it's only after the Jews have settled in the land. And so the Kliyakra similarly is going to answer this idea that only once we've settled, once we've received our gift, we see that things come directly from Hashem, right? Everything comes directly from Hashem to us. This is not a time when we come into the land of Israel to believe that we are the reason why we're here, right? Kochi ve'otzim yadi, because of my strength, right? Because of my power, I built this land up, now it's mine. No, this is exactly the time to realize the only reason I'm here is because Hashem gave this to me. Now, He gave us an Aretz Malei Kol Tuv, a land filled with all sorts of wonderful things, all sorts of treasures. The Kli Yakar is building on the Medrash over here, which tells the tale of a woman who was very stingy, and the neighbors would come to her and they'd say, one day, can I borrow this? And she'd say, oh, sorry, I don't have one of those. The next day, can I borrow this? Nope, sorry, I don't have one of those. Right? She was just one of those people that was very particular. She didn't like other people touching her stuff. She didn't want to share it. So what happens, says the Medrash? The Tzarat comes on her house. And now, when Tzarat comes to your house, you got till the Kohen shows up to get everything out of your house. Because once he comes into the house and he says, this is a Tzarat, right? Then everything in the house becomes spiritually impure. And so she starts pulling out all her stuff into the street, right? Here comes the lawnmower, the fruit ninja, right? Here comes the Dyson super vac. And all of a sudden, all the neighbors are looking and she said, wait a minute. She told me she doesn't have one of those. Oh, right? So this idea that the Tzarat comes about from a person's stinginess, right? And that's what we're fixing up. The Tzarat is giving the opportunity to fix up your stinginess. So Hashem says, when you come into the land, if you're stingy, right? So boom, there's the affliction on your home. You open up the wall, you find the treasure, and Hashem says, now that you're fixed up, now that you get it, here's the kol tuv. Here's all the goodness I want you to have. Make sure to use it in the proper, healthy way. Okay, so through these ideas of the Alshech, the Kli Yakar, right, we're learning how it's possible for Hashem to bring these things, why it's really mercy that Hashem's giving us, how it's possible that a person himself can receive something good even though he's done something bad, right? He himself is growing, he's learning, he's able to receive a reward from this. Or the Alshul just saying it's not a contradiction, he can get it from a different place. But the one thing that's still difficult for me, what the Achronim don't answer directly, is that how is it that this person merits through him that all the Jewish people should learn about the treasures hidden in their homes. Now, actually, if we go back and we look at that language in Rashi, we see very strongly implied that Rashi is rejecting the possibility that the negoim on the houses, these blemishes on the homes, have anything to do with the other ideas that we spoke about in the Gemara and the Medrash. If we look at Rashi, Rashi says, I gave you this blemish of Tzarat, right? It's a bearer of good tiding that these negoim, these blemishes, are coming to you. And that's it. There's no other reason. Rashi seems to imply that that is the only reason. And as a matter of fact, if you look at the language of the Achronim that we brought up, the different commentaries who speak about it, they do seem to speak about the opinion that it's a good tiding seems to be a different approach than the other opinions. And as a matter of fact, if we get to the Yefes Tohar on the Medrash and the Medrash Rabbah, one of the commentaries there, the Yefes Tohar, when we get to this opinion of Rabbi Shimon that the blemishes on the homes in the land of Israel were there to bear good tidings for the Jewish people, a herald of good tidings, that there was treasure hidden in them homes, that he in fact argues on the earlier opinions where it says that it's God's mercy that he starts with a home and then the clothes and then the body. Why? Because, says the Yefes Tohar, there it's a punishment. It's an onesh. And in our case of Rabbi Shimon, it's not an onesh. In fact, it is a gift. And we see that from the language natati, which we will strengthen in a few moments, why that's the case. Now the question that we would then come about with, if we accept this idea, that's it. There's a machloket, there's a disagreement in the Tanaim whether or not the tzarat on the homes was a punishment, just that Hashem starts with the most removed punishment and then moves further in, or whether or not it was in fact the opposite. It was a harbinger of good tidings. Well, then we would still have to ask the question, why is it when these three parshiot come right after the other? The tzarat on the body, the tzarat on the garment, and then the tzarat on the home. Why would all of a sudden the Chumash shift and say, well, this third thing really has nothing to do with the first two things? So if we actually look very closely at the Chumash, we will notice something really remarkable, which is going to be a support for Rashi and Rabbi Shimon, and a question on everybody else, which is the structure of the parshios actually flows as follows. First, we discuss the blemishes on the person's body. Then the Chumash goes on to discuss the blemishes on a garment. Then Parshas Metzora starts with the purification process of the person. We talk about the purification process of the garments at the end of Tazria. So we have the tzarat of the person, the tzarat of the garment, the purification of the garment, the purification of the person, and only then do we have the tzarat of the homes and the purification process of the homes. So actually, structurally, there's something really remarkable over here. Other than the language of venatati, right, which we're going to see is a language of giving a gift, beyond that, we see that it's a different parsha in the Chumash. It is structured separate from the first two cases of the tzarat on the person and tzarat on the garment. Only after we finish those discussions do we start the discussion of the tzarat on the home. So, given the givens, we're going to move forward with Rashi. And we're going to say, okay, Rashi, we got it. It's a new parsha. It's coming to teach us something else. Now, I don't know if that makes things easier or absolutely more confusing. Because why in the world would Hashem choose of all the vehicles to reveal the hidden wealth of the land of Israel to us through Nagoyim, which is a tool for punishment? Right? As we pointed out earlier, the prophet could have revealed it. A loose rock falling out of the right place at the right time could have revealed it. Everywhere, these blemishes are a tool of punishing them. Now, why are they coming as a tool purely for reward, right? According to this opinion, they cannot be a punishment. This is what we saw from the Yefes Tohar. That's how we know that Rabbi Shimon is arguing on the earlier Tanaim. According to him, it's purely a gift, and there is no element of punishment involved. So a possible answer to that question is actually if we adjust the question a little bit and we say, well, there is one case in which Nigoyim could still be a sort of a punishment, but it would not be a contradiction to Rabbi Shimon. And that would be if it's a punishment that comes to all the Jewish people together collectively. That is to say, if it's an individual punishment, then it cannot simultaneously be a besora, according to the Efes Torah, according to Rabbi Shimon. But if it's something that all the Jewish people have this challenge and have this struggle, then in fact, it is not problematic for as well to be a bearing of good tidings, a bearer of good tidings for all the Jewish people. And there is one place where all Jewish people struggle with tzar ayin, with stinginess, with a negative outlook. And that one place is Eretz Yisrael. It's the land of Israel, as the Meraglim, as the spies said when they saw the challenges of Eretz Yisrael. They called it Eretz Ochelet Yoshveah. It's the land that devours its inhabitants. So the support for this idea that I'm saying is the Gemara and Brachos on Daf Hei Amud Aleph. It says, Gimel Matanos Tovos Niknin B'Yisurim. There are three great gifts which we acquire through Yisurim, hardship. And the land of Israel is one of them. They are Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, Torah, and Olam Haba, the world to come. And if you look at the Gemara over there explains how we see that they all come through hardships. The Marsha adds the missing piece, which is how do we see that all these three things are great gifts? And the Machane Meshutaf, the common denominator between all of these things, is the word Natati. For Torah, Lekach Tov Natati Lechem. For the world to come, Natati Lechem Et HaChaim V'et HaMavis. Right? For the land of Israel, Haaretz HaTova Asher Nosan Loch. All of these words have this word, Natati. Natati meaning something which is a gift, right? Hashem points out directly it's coming from Him, so we know that it's a gift. And you wouldn't be shocked, then, to find out that the author of this mimer, of this saying in Brachos Daf Hei, page 5, folio A, is none other than Reb Shimon himself. That's right, Reb Shimon, the Tana who told us that the blemishes on the homes in the land of Israel are a gift from Hashem. So we have this word Natati by the blemishes, this word Natati by the three great gifts. Reb Shimon saying in both cases, right, that these are all gifts from Hashem. Now these three concepts, the world to come, Torah, the land of Israel, the Marsha over there explains that these are three things that are very valuable. And as we know, hopefully through life experience, things that are of true value always require struggle, hard work, because things that are deeply value require sacrifice. They require effort. They require stumbling and making mistakes, right? The greater the value, the greater the challenge, the greater the risks. And so in their very essence, Torah, the world to come, the land of Israel, they all have their challenges and their struggles because they're valuable basically without limit. The Jewish people struggle with the land of Israel. The land of Israel is a place of tremendous providence. The Meraglim bring back huge fruits. Look at the size of these grapes. Look at these pomegranates. And you know what happens when you try to eat them? The land eats you. It's a place of tremendous physical abundance, but the land of Israel isn't about physical abundance. It's about spiritual abundance. It's about tapping into that physicality and using it properly. And if you don't, well, it can get very dangerous. Because the closer you move to the Shekhinah, and we don't mean physical movement, we mean spiritual movement. The closer you move to the Shekhinah, the more direct the consequences for your actions are going to become. So Eretz Yisrael is this place where you have to constantly find Hashem through nature, and there's a lot of hardships in doing that, especially when you fail. And it's so powerful that the Meraglim wanted nothing to do with it. They wanted to keep the people out. And so therefore, all the Jews coming into the land, settling the land of Israel for the first time, they all needed to have this lesson. You stroll into the land of Israel, you got a fully built house. And what do you think is going to happen? Boom, the second you own your home, the second the Jew makes an acquisition on the home, the walls start to sprout blemishes. Because the land of Israel is acquired through hardship. You need to value what you have. So in this approach, it's not an individual who's now bringing about the Besorah. He's bringing about the good tidings for the people. And we ask the question, wait, he's wicked. How come he gets to be the guy? Rather, everybody is the Mevaser. Everybody is sharing this collective moment when they come into the land of Israel. So we don't need our Zakai, our single meritorious individual. The question is now, the idea becomes, how will you react when you come into the land of Israel, when you come into your home and you see a nega on your wall? Because, you know, in a way, even though the Midrashim told us that it's a mercy that Hashem starts with your home and then your garment and then your person, but if you think about it, psychologically, a nega on a house, right, is possibly the most difficult of all the negoyim. I mean, look, if you get a nega on your body, okay, you're in isolation. Maximum 3 weeks, you're in isolation. You go through a tahara process. Not so fun. They shave your entire body. You go in the mikvah, right? You have to bring all the different korbanos. But when you have a nega on your home, you got to take everything out of your house and you got to lock up your house. Your house could be locked up for a week, 2 weeks. You're knocking down walls. You might have to knock down the whole house. You might have to move your entire family. What are you going to do with all your belongings during this period? You got to knock on your neighbor's house, your friend's house, your sister's house. You got to ask people for favors. I mean, could you imagine? You're basically not just you, but you and all your possessions and all your family are homeless for at least 2 weeks. Plus, you're paying for the repairs for the guy to work on the house, right? The best case scenario, you schlepped all your belongings out of your house, and then you had to put them all back in. You might have to get a new house entirely. These are serious hardships. But these are the hardships of living in the land of Israel. So there's a big nisayon. There's a big challenge over here. Now, we know that every Jew is going to call the Kohen. He is. He's going to call the Kohen. He's going to swallow the hard pill and do what he needs to do. But when he sees the nega, does he jump? Does he say, oh, it's a nega. I have a positive commandment. I got to find the Kohen. I got to get him to come. Now, remember, this isn't a nega that came because there was something wrong with his behavior. It just came from coming into the land of Israel. But he knows that it means headaches for the next 2 weeks. So does he jump right away to get the Kohen? Does he dilly-dally? Does he delay? Does he take a deep sigh? Does he say, oh, Hashem Yishmor. Oh, it's so hard living in the land of Israel. There's a big Yetzer Hara. But when he removes that first brick, and he finds the treasure in the wall, he and all the Jewish people learn an incredible lesson, which is doing Ratzon Hashem is a treasure. You acquire the land of Israel through Yisurim, but after the Yisurim, you acquired it, right? When they moved into the homes, they're taking possession. So yes, it's hard, but it's hard because you are gaining something amazing. You have acquired the land of Israel, and that is the lesson of the Negoim that Rashi and Reb Shimon are trying to teach us as to why the revelation of the treasures in the land of Israel have to come through the Nega on the homes, at least to the best of my understanding. Now, just to wrap it up in a big, beautiful, shiny basket, because why wouldn't we want to do that? There's a lovely, incredible Chidush HaRim over here. Kedarko Bakodesh, in his amazing way, the Chidush HaRim is always incredible with ideas and words and language. Chidush HaRim points out that the word oneg, which means pleasure, right, joy, shares the same three-letter root as the word nega, right? Ayin, Nun, Gimel. Nun, Gimel, Ayin. It's the same three-letter root. So says the Chiddush HaRem. So what's the difference between an Oneg and a Nega if it's all the same letters? Answers the Chiddush HaRem. The difference is, where do you put your Ayin? How are you using your Ayin? Ayin is the name of a letter, but it's also the name of our eye, right? It's our eye. How are you looking at the world? How are you using your Ayin? What are you doing with it? If you want to put the Ayin at the end, you have a Nega. You see everything in the world, you see blemishes. If you're willing to put your Ayin in the front, then everything you see in life will become an Oneg. The blemish and the hidden treasure come together because they're one. The difference is, how are you using your Ayin? Are you seeing in this Nega a hidden treasure? Or are you only seeing the Nega on the outside? Okay, that was good. That wraps up a question I had for a few years. And I hope you all have a wonderful, lovely Shabbos filled with Oneg and Kol Tuv.